Well, I want to introduce to you a classmate of mine. Like, that's weird to say when it's been so long now. But this is Travis Hurley. He's on staff at Watered Gardens, and he's come here to kind of, we're just going to talk with him about some of the things that Watered Garden does and the ministry that they perform in Joplin and the surrounding areas. We're going to kick it off here. I'm going to pray, and then we're going to watch a short video from James Whitford, who he's like the brains of the operation. Not that there's not brains here. I mean, just saying. I had to get something in while I've got my mic on and his is off. So, but James, he's kind of the creator at Watered Gardens, and he's going to give us a brief overview of what they do. And so let me pray. Father God, we're glad to be able to be here in your presence. And we recognize that you are here because you have decided that it would be appropriate for you to live in each one of your believers. And so we know that that is something that unites us. We are one because we are united by the blood of Christ and by the presence of your Spirit inside of each one of us. And so I pray, Father, that today, again, as we talk about another one of our mission points, that we are reminded that because you are inside of us, that the things that move the heart of the Lord should move us. And I pray that that will be the case today, that we will be inspired and enlightened and motivated today by what we talk about the ministry that's being provided to the homeless and the hurting. And so I pray it will be a blessing for Watered Gardens and an encouragement for us to participate in the work that they are performing for you. All of this is for your glory. We love you and we praise you. In your name I pray. Amen.
Our founding scripture comes from Isaiah chapter 58. In this particular passage, God is chastising his people through the prophet because they're simply going through religious motions instead of sincerely seeking his heart with a willingness to obey. Fasting as a form of self-denial fell short of God's intent for his people to care for others. Beginning in verse 6, he says, "Is this not the fast I choose, that you divide your bread with the hungry, shelter the homeless poor, and clothe the naked?" Today, God is still calling his people to action that stems from real compassion. The call hasn't changed, and the promises haven't either. In verse 11, Isaiah conveys God's promise of a flourishing life when we help the poor. "You'll be like a watered garden and like a spring whose waters never fail." Most of us have experienced this. It feels really good to give. But how can we do that without worsening the entitlement mentality we see too often among the poor in our cities? How can we care for people in need without trapping them in dependency? What is the key to empowerment? At Watered Gardens Ministries, we believe it starts with viewing each person as a unique contributor with ability and capacity, more than just a head counted as a number with a need. From the moment we greet someone who steps into our outreach center for food or shelter or some other basic need, we recognize the brokenness and the injustice, but we also look beyond that to the person God made in his image. Acting on that vision of the person as contributor, we provide an opportunity for anything in our ministry to be earned in our worth shop. Work doesn't only awaken worth, but it starts a person down that path of experiencing the joy of earned success. That path may be at our Washington Family Hope Center, where we help moms with children regain their footing, begin to dream about a better future, and then develop a plan to reach it. Or it may be through our Center for Virtue and Work, Forge, a long-term program for men focused on character development and work readiness, with a goal to graduate Christians who are employed, independent, and active in their local church. Empowerment begins with having the proper perspective of the human person. But for the work of empowerment to be successful, we believe it must be done from private, voluntary means. This is why Watered Gardens Ministries has never taken a government dollar. We also believe ongoing success is dependent on our diligence to measure impact. Without measuring outcomes, success is merely conjecture. We are successful, and we want you to be a part of it. And the more you are, the more successful we'll be. Will you read again Isaiah 58? And when you do, I hope you too will hear the call of God on your own life to give and serve out of compassion and in a way that's both relational and responsible. There's someone out there right now who's only known the receiving end of another's charity. Let's empower him instead.
So that's James Whitford. He's he and his wife started Water Gardens, man, a long time ago. Yeah, and a lot of changes that they've made. Kind of fill in the blanks of a few things of some of the things that Water Gardens does and what your role is, and
Yeah, well, again, my name is Travis Hurley. I serve as the Director of Advancement for Water Gardens. That's a role that involves the fundraising side of things, the marketing, the promotion, and future planning for the ministry to make sure we grow at a pace that our donors can keep up with. Water Gardens started in year 2000 by James and Marcia Whitford. They were actually just seeing people under the bridge in Joplin and felt like they needed to do something. Now, I don't know that they knew it at the time, but what they were feeling was what we call compassion. And the Greek word for that is like nitsomai. I remember Mark Scott teaching it at Ozark. He says, it sounds like you're tossing your cookies when you say it's like nitsomai, you know. But it's that feeling that's guttural. It's inside you that causes you to want to do something to help somebody. And so that's what they did. They started serving sandwiches out of the back of a van. And that led to them opening a day outreach center on the backside of the American Red Cross building on 4th and Jackson. Just open during the day, people would come if they had a need, whether it was help with an electric bill or food or clothing or what have you. And what they would do is they would get the need from them and they would start calling the churches until some church was able to help meet that need. But they grew frustrated over time because they were seeing the same people over and over and over again. They never felt like they were resolving the issues in people's lives. And that's when they began to, you know, you talk about the brains of the operation. James just kind of started reading some books that helped shape the way Water Garden shifted the approach in the mid-2000, about 2007, 2008, and that's kind of the direction that the whole ministry has taken since and has really grown.
Yeah, I know. I remember one of the classes that I took with James. He talked about the numbers of people, and I don't remember the exact numbers, but if I remember right, at one point before they started changing how they operated, they were serving like 4,500
That's right.
People, meals and bills and stuff like that. But when they were looking back and trying to evaluate what did we really accomplish, they really felt like they didn't really do anything. They had a lot of repeat customers and well, I say customers, but people that kept coming, and they didn't really feel like they were changing anybody's lives. And they felt like their goal was really to help people get out of poverty,
That's
not
right.
just throw product at them.
Right.
And so they started making some changes in developing these principles that they operate with now. And in some ways, it feels like a failure. A lot of people will look at it as a failure because they went from serving 4,500 people to 2,500.
That's right.
But the reality was, part of that was because they had changed so many people's lives with the new principles that they didn't have to come anymore. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead. Some of it was that, and some of it was people said, well, I don't like your new approach.
Right.
And there's somewhere else I can go where I don't have to do this. Well, what is that new approach? Well, if you know anything about us, you know that we try to incorporate exchange, or another word for it would be challenge or work or partnership for anything that someone needs. So as soon as they started saying, listen, we want you to put a little skin in the game, We'll help you with whatever it is you might have a need for, but we also recognize that you were made in the image of God, and you have inherent dignity, you have inherent value, you have worth, and you maybe have lost sight of that, but we want to help reawaken that. And we believe that the way you reawaken worth in a life is through work.
Right.
You begin to pull out of people this, hey, I can do something. And so as people were able to partner for what they need, it breaks dependency in their life, but not everybody wants that. Some, you know, we're humans, so what's the path of least resistance? And so there are always other places someone can go and receive what we would call a handout style of ministry. But we don't do that anymore. And we did. We stopped serving. About 2,000 people quit coming. But the ones we were working with, it was a different quality of interaction. Because these were folks who wanted to participate in their own success. And so we began measuring what is success. It can't just be how many nights of shelter you provide, although we do provide over 20,000 nights a year. It can't just be how much food is distributed, although we, you know, distributed 45,000 pounds of food last year. But it's also how many people that needed food at one point no longer need it. How many people who came into our shelter without a home left with their own place to move into? How many people came to Watered Gardens with no source of income except a government check and now are off of government assistance and have a job? How many people, when they came into Watered Gardens, had no other place to turn? And they came to us because every other relational bridge had been burned, now are reconnected with family and friends and a church. So we try to measure those. We call those outcomes, not just outputs. And you start to see more of that with people that are willing to invest in their own success.
I know one of the phrases, you avoided using it, but you talked completely about it. But I know one of the ones that James throws around is work makes worth.
Yeah, reawakens worth. That's right. Yeah, we started, because people are working to earn basic needs, you have to be careful with your language, or, you know, someone will go, well, hey, what about workman's comp and all those. We actually had to go to the state and appeal.
Don't freak out. I'm going to do this. What's it bothering you? I'm going to move you right here.
Thank you.
There we go.
Is that better? I could hear me. I don't know what your problem is.
I have finicky people. Every time you turn your head this way, these people couldn't hear.
Oh, I got you. Okay. Yeah, so what I was saying was we had to actually go to the state legislature in Missouri and get some wording changed just to allow us to employ people for their basic needs. And the concern is you'll take advantage of somebody, that you'll become a slave driver, you know, that there are labor laws to protect people. We weren't doing anything like that. This was, hey, if you work for an hour in the worth shop, you can get a week's worth of food. So it was always a generous rate of exchange. But we began using words like partner and exchange and challenge just to so people don't misunderstand. But the bottom line is, I think work is a good thing. Adam and Eve were working before the fall. Work just became hard after the fall, right? So we encourage work, and we think it gives people a sense of purpose. And, you know, there's nothing worse than waking up in the morning and having no reason to get out of bed.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the people that you tend to work with the most. Like, who are the people that are being helped and served? And
well, I love that's a great question. First of all, I don't know if you caught it in the video, but Watered Gardens does not exist to serve the poor. And that's probably the largest misunderstanding that we continue to address with folks. Our mission statement is we exist to serve the church, because we believe it's the church's job to minister to the poor and homeless among us. What we try to be is a conduit for the church to do that well. So, you know, who is it you serve? We serve the church. And so we have, in December, we had over 1,000 volunteer shifts that were filled by members of the churches in the Joplin and surrounding area. And what we try to do is be a place where we've studied a lot of this, we've learned a lot of what not to do, and if you become involved, you're going to be better equipped to know how to handle somebody who's in a situation in your church setting in need of help, or if you see someone on a street corner holding a sign, what do you do in that situation? And we try to address all of that, and you learn that through volunteering and getting to know people. But if you were to volunteer, what kind of folks would you see come through the doors at Watered Gardens? Well, there's a variety. We have folks who are homeless and are totally fine with that lifestyle. They have no desire to get their own place. They'll just come in and work to earn a shower or to earn access to the laundry facilities and to get a meal ticket. And they may head on down the road into another community And I know some folks who have been homeless for 20 years, and this is just the lifestyle they've chosen. That's okay. That's all right. Then you have others who they've got mental challenges that are preventing them from working enough to move into their own place. And the government assistance isn't quite enough, and so we try to assist with them. And we're right now working to resolve some of those issues with the exploration of tiny home communities. That's been a hot topic, not just at Watered Gardens, but other nonprofits. So we're looking into that. You have folks coming out of incarceration. You have folks that are dealing with addiction. You have folks who are just chronically homeless, some who are in a crisis situation, a fire that happened in their own home, and suddenly they have no place to go. Went through a divorce, something like that, and now they find themselves at our shelter. I stay sometimes overnight at the outreach center. That's a volunteer shift you can fill. And when there isn't a man from the local churches that takes a shift, some of the staff fill in. So I do that on occasion, and I would love for you to help me by volunteering. So I'm not doing that as often as I do. But there are times when I'm sitting at that desk and I'm having a conversation with somebody and I hear their story and I can think of times in my own life where had things gone just a little differently, I might be right there. Mm-hmm. I think that's the other hurdle that we try to overcome with folks is to start viewing folks that are in need as your neighbors and not those people or Watered Gardens people. We've got other businesses around us that sometimes say, hey, your people are over on our property. They're not our people any more than they're yours. Mm-hmm. We're all in this together, right?
I remember somebody at one point talking about who is my neighbor. I don't remember who that was.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
I think it was Jesus.
It might have been. So a valid question, I think, that would come out with this, especially with our culture right now, is why help these people? Like, isn't this the government's job? Like, don't we have programs that do all of this? Why should the church care about this? Why should we be involved in this instead of just letting all the government programs do it?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I don't think we can look at anything. I may reveal my bias here. I don't look at a lot of things that the government has tackled and see it as something they've tackled well. And I have found, and we believe in the principle of subsidiarity, which is that those who are closest to an issue are the best equipped to handle it. And so if someone is in need, the furthest away you can go in the United States to have that need met is our federal government. Mm-hmm. And then there's the state, and then there's local. But those, you're a number. You're one of several. And the laws about discrimination prevent any kind of discernment to be applied to a situation where one person may have a legitimate need that can be met, and someone else may be fully capable of working, and they just figured out how to game the system. And the only way to really dig into that is to have deeper conversations with somebody and get to know them. The other factor in all of this is that true poverty is not a lack of resources. I don't know about you, but if my house burned down tonight, I've got a whole list of people in this phone that I could call and would have a place to stay. If I were without a meal today, I know there are some donuts right outside. Might be some leftover, I don't know. But I know there are people who would take care of that for me. When someone walks into one of our campuses, they've usually burned all of those bridges. Well, who's going to rebuild those? The government can't. They can't rebuild those bridges for you. So when you're in a private situation like ours, we can ask some of those questions. Where's mom? Where's dad? Where's your brother? Where's your son or daughter? What church are you involved in? And we can build, reconnect those relationships. We had a guy come through, and he's from California. Where's your mom? Well, she doesn't want to hear from me. Well, we got on the phone with her, and she was broke down. Was just so grateful to know where her son was. Ended up, we sent him back, flew him back to California to be reunited with his mom. Those relationships are what help get people out of their situation and keep them out of it. If you don't build those strong relationships around somebody, even if you meet their need right now, next month they're going to be right back in that situation again.
Yeah, a lot of times people think that programs like Water Gardens, it's just all about knowing where the money is to be able to, and where the programs are to be able to give the resources to the people, but their number one resource is the people that are closest to them. It's family, friends, outer community, churches, you know, and then it goes out. And if none of those are available for them, then
we explore other options.
Yes.
That's right. Yeah, we have a lot of ministries similar to ours. They work to get you signed up for as many benefits as you can get.
Right.
Our approach is the direct opposite of that. You know, let's see if we can get rid of that. We used to have a wall of fame. I don't know if it's still up. People would take their SNAP cards and turn them in as part of, if you entered into our long-term recovery program for men, you would turn in that card, we put it on the wall and say, this person is choosing to leave that and trust in God to provide in another way. And people that have done that talk about how freeing it is over time.
Yeah, I know. I remember reading, well, I don't even remember where it was, but that sometimes people will take those SNAP cards, they'll sell. Like that's a market. There's a monetary value in that for them. They'll sell for a percentage on a dollar that so they can buy other stuff.
Yeah.
And so they're even giving.
Well, yeah, there's that goes on, the free cell phone program that started a few years ago. We would see a vehicle pull up right down the street, pop open the trunk, and start handing out cell phones and that tax dollars are paying for. And what we would see on the inside is here's somebody who maybe has been clean for 3 weeks and really trying to get their life on track. You hand them that, they go and sell it, they go on a bender for a few days, and then they're out of the shelter for a while, and then we have to start back over. Mm-hmm. So those are well-intended things that from a distance look good that create consequences in the immediate that we're trying to combat.
Yep. So just to highlight that, just to the focus of the one of the cures, one of the keys for getting people out of poverty is relationship more than resources.
That's right. Yeah, we want folks to come and volunteer, but we don't focus on the task that we give you. You know, if you're going to work in the office at the outreach center, that's great. That's a great shift. We want you to make sure that you're getting to know the people that are coming in, that you don't be in such a rush to get the thing done that you're not developing relationships to support and pray for folks, because that's what they need. And if we hear anything repeatedly from folks who've come through and been served at Watered Gardens, is there's just something different here about the people that they really seem to care.
Mm-hmm.
And if we ever lose that, we know we've lost our way.
Yep. I know another one of the phrases that James uses and that you guys all use, I say James, but is it's a hand up, not a hand out. And you know, what's the difference between a hand out and a hand up, and you know,
I love that. So that comes from a book by Robert Lupton called Toxic Charity. And Robert Lupton started working in the inner city of Atlanta in 1974. Now, this is the year I was born, so I'm like, okay, I need to listen. This guy knows what he's doing. And he said what we found over time was there is a cycle of dependency that takes place when you're just giving over and over to somebody. That's a handout with no exchange, no investment on their part. First time you do it, they express appreciation. Wow, thank you. The second time, anticipation that you'll do it a third time. The third time you give to somebody, they now expect it. So now it's expectation. By the fourth time, they feel entitled to it. And by the fifth time, they're dependent on you for their resources. And that's not good for them, and that's not good for you. It creates a paternalistic situation. And so we say, rather than a handout, let's do, and even the hand up, I don't even care for that phrase. It's mm-hmm. used a lot. James has used it, and I've told him I don't like using that because it suggests somehow that I'm above you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to lift you up to where I am.
Yep.
I told that to somebody. They said, oh, yeah, that's good. How about a hand across then? That way we're on the same level. And I said, yeah, but even that suggests that where I am is where they need to be. And it may not be. So what if we just got rid of the hands? Right? Instead of a hand out or a hand up or a hand across, what we strive for is put your arm around them and walk with them. Say, I don't know where God's going to take you, but I'm willing to walk there with you. One of the first principles of effective charity is affiliation, and the second is bonding. We have the ABCs, and we do these in an all-day workshop that actually this Friday There's going to be one at Wellspring Church in Joplin. We teach this all over the country. We were in Huntsville, Alabama a couple months ago, had over almost 50 different nonprofits, over 100 different leaders that came to this. So, and people pay for this, but I was told to let you know that anybody that wants to go from this congregation, register with Aaron, and it'll be free for you this Friday at Wellspring Church in Joplin.
It's in Webb City. Yeah, it's
Webb City.
Yep. There's in our app, there's in the newsletter, if you go to the newsletter, there's a picture for that. If you just touch that picture, it takes you to the link. Or if you don't want to do it that way, or if that doesn't work for you, just holler at me. And anybody, yeah, we'd love for as many of you that want to go and learn some of these principles and learn more about this, because we have a heart for people, but sometimes we feel like, I don't know what to do, you know, beyond here's $20. And that's not really the best way to help people. And so one of the ways that we can become better equipped Christians is knowledge, is understanding what are the principles of help, what is the end goal for this person, and how, like, sometimes when you hear stuff like this, you think, well, is this like a black hole that I'm going to be jumping into, and now I'm going to be investing in like this total stranger's life for the rest of my life? Well, first of all, I would say, if that's what it takes, then that's what, and the Lord is leading you to do that, then yes. Like, we should not ever, as Christians, be afraid of investing in a stranger's life. That's part of, you know, when I joked earlier about Jesus and the comment about who's my neighbor, that was part of his point. With the parable of the Good Samaritan, was he was a total stranger. And he nursed his wounds, took him to a place where he could be cared for, paid the bill for this person, and then checked up on him. Like, there was some personal investment in there. And so part of me is like, yes, that should be something that we should be interested in doing, but we shouldn't go into it blindly. And so, so anybody who's interested in going to that, that's a generous thing that they're allowing us to go free. And we're part of the True Charity Network, and we're collaborating, partnering with them in ministry with Water Gardens and True Charity in that way. So yeah, that's on our list of things for you guys to know. If you want to do that, find me, I can get you signed up, or just click that image on in the newsletter on the church app, and we can get you there.
Yeah, and our hope is we would love to see it, one of those workshops held over here.
Yeah.
But we go through those ABCs, and A is affiliation, B is bonding. And the reason I bring that up is the first question you ask when someone comes with a need should not be, what is your need? It should be, how did you get to this situation? What can you do? And where is your support? Before you step in and become one of their support, you need to identify, because a lot of times there's a story there. Mm-hmm. You know, why are you here? Where are your parents? Where is your brother or sister? Where is your spouse? And if we can get to that issue, we might be able to resolve something much deeper than the immediate need. But that second one is bonding. And that is basically when you begin to help somebody, you are making the decision to be part of their sphere. And so at Watered Gardens, we seek to find the affiliations in their life, and then we agree to be one of those people or one of those resources that will walk with them, putting their arm around them in that way.
Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of ways that Water Gardens provides for people to get involved in their ministry. There's all sorts of different things, resources, but also service opportunities. I've got a list of them here, but
there's a lot.
So let people know that there's a lot of opportunities, because it's not just a matter of, you know, our deacons board has committed to giving an X amount of money to the ministry, but there's lots of other ways that we have people here. I know my sister-in-law comes and serves,
yep,
and
right,
there are people who have made some donations and stuff like that. But what are some of the ways that people can,
yes,
help out?
Well, thank you for that opportunity. I want to express appreciation to the church. I know that this congregation has given for several years at different points, including you helped us with our campaign to get the shelter open for moms and kids. Mm-hmm. And then I know many of you voted to help us get that Chick-fil-A award that you found out just a couple weeks ago we got it. We're so excited about that. Yes. Yes. So that was $125,000, and we know that it's going to be about $1 million to renovate the upstairs and do some things with the lot itself. And we sent out a letter at the end of December encouraging people maybe make a year-end gift, and we're now at $425,000 that's been raised toward that. We're almost halfway there, so we're excited about that. we hope to get that done and the money for that, and so that it can be open by next spring. But we are 100% privately funded, so obviously financially is a way to partner. We never want someone to give to Watered Gardens what should be going to the church. But when you have an overabundance and you have other things that you give toward, a great way to partner with us is through our one-night program, where for $15 a month, you cover one night of shelter at one of our campuses. And we've got at our main outreach center 38 beds for men, 10 for women, and a respite unit of 6 beds for people that come out of the hospital but need more time to recover before they go into the general population of those other two shelters. We've got that Forge program for men, 21 beds over there, where we take in up to 6 guys every quarter, and they go into this long-term recovery, 16 months, where by the time they leave our program, when they graduate, they have their own job, they're off of all government assistance, they're active in the church, and they have their own place to live. Then we have the Washington Family Hope Center, the one for moms and kids, where there's 6 family units, and each unit has a space for mom and up to 4 kids, and we're getting ready to add 9 more upstairs. We've turned away over 100 different moms just since last May that are needing a place, because we've been full since we opened in June of 2020. So there's a need there. So that's the kind of the...
And how can they help at the Washington Hope Center? I know that you guys have your, on your Facebook page, you guys list when you need workers. But what kind of work?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Beyond just those financial needs to take care of those beds, is there are volunteer opportunities at each one of these places. So we have meal crews that are volunteers from churches and in the community that bring breakfast and dinner every day at the main outreach center. And then they bring dinner to the Forge, and they bring dinner to the Washington family. So meal crews are a great way to get a group together to serve. Individually, you can be a volunteer who helps with check-in at the outreach center. You can be a host at the Washington Family Hope Center. You can help with childcare. We provide childcare on-site for those moms so they can go back to school if they need to, or they can find a job and begin to save their money again. So there's childcare there. There's hosting, staying overnight. I'm always looking for guys willing to come to the outreach center and stay overnight. And it's either it's men or married couples. We don't have women come by themselves. Just not that we think anything's going to go wrong, but on the rare occasion that something goes haywire at 2 in the morning, I have had a couple times where someone came wandering down the stairs, the alarms are going off, and so just for safety's sake, we do encourage it. It's either a man or a couple of guys or a married couple. But we always need men willing to come and do that. And usually that's the scary one, because I'm staying overnight in a homeless shelter. And the first couple times you start to realize, hey, these are just people and there's safety measures in place. But we want to make sure the presence of Christ is there 24/7. And that's a way for you as a church to serve. We also look for people willing to be mentors, where somebody needs someone who will meet with them weekly and just have coffee with them and have real conversation and find out about their life and genuinely care, and then speak truth and wisdom into it and walk with them. We had a guy who graduated from our Forge program and still meets weekly with someone who's a Christian business owner 40 minutes away, and he comes every week and meets with him. And they've become very close friends as a result of that. That's a way to invest. What you should not do is give money out of your car window when you see someone stand on the street corner holding a sign. Don't give money. Studies have shown 9 out of 10 are feeding an addiction. And unless you have the time to investigate their situation and find out if they're the 1 out of 10, send them to some place that will do the investigative work. Ask the right questions. Build the relationship. So we tell people, send them to Watered Gardens. And if they tell you, I don't want to go there, that should give you a clue that they've already been and they don't like someone trying to encourage them down that road. They've taken the path of least resistance. So if you don't have time to roll down your window and crawl out of it and give them relationship, send them somewhere where they'll get that.
There's also things like the... you guys take electronic donations?
Yes. We have the workshop, the other campus. This is where people work to earn what they need, but we also have right inside there is our thrift store. We call it the Garden Exchange. And instead of paying for it, people work to earn it, and then they go back and they pick it up. So we need new or gently used clothing, household appliances, furniture, beds, things of that nature. We also have our Mission Market grocery store, similar concept, no money is exchanged. People pick out their groceries, they go work to earn them, come back and pick them up. All of that food is donated. We don't take government stuff, so we need people willing to stock those shelves, do food drives. And then if you have old appliances or electronics, you can drop those off at our recycling center.
It's like TVs and computers and
yes, we're
monitors.
Licensed to break down computers in a safe way, and we have a company in Arkansas that picks that stuff up. But anything that you donate, if we can't use it, it goes out the back and gets recycled. And we all of that is designed to help offset the cost of the Worthshop campus. We take the copper out of that, and people are, and when I say we, clients, as they're earning what they need, break that down, they clean it, they turn it into jewelry that we're able to sell. We roast and grind our own coffee. We have journals that we make. We now make fudge over at the Washington Family Hope Center, and we do fundraisers. So if you have a community group that needs to do a fundraiser, consider doing it with us. It's a win-win that way.
Yep.
But these are all ways that you can contribute. Maybe you don't have the time to volunteer, but you have some things you could give.
And another one you can do, I've got a link in the newsletter about this, but Amazon Smile.
Yep.
How many of you shop on Amazon? Right? One of the things that you can do is Amazon has this program called Amazon Smile, and all it is you go into your Amazon account and you can choose to, part of your purchase goes towards Water Gardens. So you can select, and we've got a number of our mission points. Water Gardens is one of them that is on there, but it doesn't cost you. You're not paying anything extra. You're still paying the same thing that you would have paid for your spatula or whatever it is that you just bought. But a percentage of that purchase, Amazon donates to that mission point. But you got to set up. It'll take 2 minutes of your day. But if you'll go into your Amazon account, you can set that up, and then every time you make a purchase from Amazon, a percentage of that goes towards Watered Gardens, and all of that stuff adds up.
It really does. And I've encouraged people too. When you have your Facebook birthday, and you've probably seen where people will choose a fundraiser, you can choose Watered Gardens for that and make that for people that want to wish you a happy birthday and do something in your honor. They can give the mission that way too.
Yep. We are going to take up an offering. A special offering. We mentioned that last week, and it was in the newsletter this morning. There's a basket there in the back, or you can, if you want to, when you do your regular offering, if you want to just put a note on that, you can also make a note on the check, and when you put it in the offering box, you can do that also. Travis takes cash.
Yes, I do.
So we're going to take that as well. What's a way that our people can pray for you guys for the mission work that you guys do?
Pray for the leadership. The ministry has exploded over the last 5 years, and that has meant four campuses and a national initiative with a network that's now in 15 states, over 60 different organizations. We're just getting started trying to build that out. These are organizations and churches who are saying, hey, we want to adopt the principles that you're teaching and implement them because we think they're more effective. And our model at Watered Gardens seems to be showing that. We're getting some attention at the national level. But as that growth happens, there's a lot of growing pains with the leadership. The staff has had to grow a little bit. The donor base has needed to grow. And it's easy to get burnt out in ministry. And so we have some on our staff that, this can be tough work. A lot of people don't realize our main outreach center is closed on Wednesday. Why? Well, because we work on Monday and Tuesday, and we have to recover and work Thursday and Friday. Now, the overnight is always open, but those days, it's a break in there to regroup because it's challenging work. So pray for the staff. Pray for those that we serve. The church, we need volunteers. So, the whole name Watered Gardens comes from Isaiah 58, and the idea there is God is saying the fasting I want from you is not just to go to church and go without food and read your Bible and pray. That would be my 21st century translation of the description there. But he says, what I want from you is to feed the hungry, clothe the naked, shelter the homeless, break the bonds of injustice. And so, and when you as God's people do that, he was talking to the Jews, but when you as God's people do that, you will be like a watered garden, like a spring whose waters never cease. And so the watered garden is the community of God. And for us to be that, we need to be about what God's heart is about. And that's these areas of injustice. So pray for the church to rally and to be more involved and more invested in that way. And then pray for those we serve, that we'll continue to see people whose lives are transformed. One of my favorite stories is Dan. I'll close with this one. Mm-hmm. I know I'm kind of going long.
Nope, we're good.
But Dan was a gang member in California. And then he had a friend out there who was visiting who said, "I'm heading back to the Midwest. You want to come with me?" And he didn't have anything going on. I said, "Sure." Hopped in her car, ended up in Joplin. Now, on a Saturday night, he was drunk and disorderly at a park and was arrested. Now, he got out the next day, and he came over to Watered Gardens just looking for food and hoping for a bed that night. Well, we were full, but the shelter manager said, "Go on upstairs and go to chapel. It's going on right now, and after chapel, there's a meal. You can stay for that." He ended up giving his life to Christ at that chapel service that night. The next night was out as part of one of our rescue teams, because every Monday night we send teams out. We know where the homeless camps are, and we encourage people to come into shelter. We try to give them some basic needs. We pray with them. And we also visit those who have left shelter and are in their own home just to continue to build those relationships, check in on them. He was part of that. Well, then he joined our long-term Forge program for men. And 16 months later, he graduated from that. Then he went to Bible college. And then he graduated from Bible college. And now he's on staff teaching as part of our Forge program. He's one of our instructors. Jocelyn was living on Skid Row in California. She's our shelter manager and has her master's degree in counseling. These are people that have come through the program. And when you share those stories, that's why people are going, what are they doing there? Because maybe we could tweak what we're doing and start to see the same kind of transformation in people's lives. Well, it all starts with Christ and his power in their lives, working through God's people. So we need you. As James says, we are successful in what we're doing. We still make a lot of mistakes, but we're seeing success, and we want you to partner with us to continue to see that.
I got a couple of scriptures that I wrote down this morning that really pertain to this. Hebrews 13:16 says, "Do not forget to do good and to share with others, for with such sacrifices God is pleased." Proverbs says, "Whoever is kind to the poor lends to the Lord, and he will reward them for what they have done." Matthew 25:35-40 says, "For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." And the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when do we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you in sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these my brothers, you did it to me." You understand now, I'm quite confident, why we partner with Watered Gardens. It is part of our role as Christians to tend to others, tend to one another, right? It's here. And so my prayer is that through this, that we will participate in more ways, that you will be moved and inspired, and I know I am, that we will participate in other ways. We will become the people that babysit, you know, one night a week, even for the mom that's trying to get her life together. She may not, it's one of those things where sometimes she may not ever meet you. You might not ever know who it is that you helped, but you took care of her kids so that she could go change her life and change the life for her kids. Or you stay the scary night at the shelter, or even if it's just a matter of you've got 4 TVs in your garage you don't even know what to do with, well, now you do.
That's right.
These are all ways that we can be the body of Christ, be the hands and feet of Christ to people who need it, that need him. So
there's some information out on the table, and I'll stand out there after service, just on each of the campuses. There's also these little cards that I found change at Watered Gardens, and we encourage people to take some of those, and if you see someone on a street corner, offer that instead of money. and it gives our directions and all the different things they can receive if they come to Water Gardens. And then I'll have the laptop set up. Mm-hmm. The volunteer sign-up form is right there. So you can just fill out your information, and then we will contact you to find out what your area of interest is, what your availability is, what your passion and experience are, and we'll try to match those up in a way that you'll feel fulfilled and it'll bless the folks we're trying to serve.
Awesome. Well, you appreciate Travis.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yep.
Thank you.
Well, why don't you stand with me and let's pray for their leadership and the future for their mission, and that God would impress upon us how we can help. So, Father God, I'm so grateful for Travis and the great word that he has brought to us and the encouragement and helping us to understand more about this ministry that I don't know how anybody can look at it and not see your hand there. We know that all of the people that are there, they do it because they love you, and they know that every one of the people that they work with bears your image, and so they are serving you by serving them. And they know that there's great worth and dignity in these people who have forgotten it, or some of them may not have ever known. And so to be able to help restore that in them and to help them to live a life that has been designed for them, because what they're living right now is not. That is not your desire or your design. So I pray, Father, for them. I know that growth creates complexity. And that's what they're experiencing right now is as they expand it, everything gets more complicated. But our desire is that they will expand, because we know that they do have a successful model of how to do this type of ministry of serving the church. And so I pray, Father, that you would give them wisdom to know how to keep things simple, bring people to them, grow people up from within, like Dan. And so my prayer, Father, is that you would continue to bless them tremendously. We know you see them. We know that you are present with them, and I pray that they will always be aware of that presence and tap into the strength that you have, because when we are weak, you are strong, and I pray that they will always be tapping into that. Convict us, Father, is my prayer, that we won't just hear these words and go, oh, that's cute, that's neat, I'm glad that they are doing that. I pray that you will convict us, because we have time, we have resources. But what I want us to have is I want us to have that gut thing, the compassion. And so my prayer, Father, is that you would stir that up in each one of us, that we would evaluate, how can I help? How can I be involved? Move us and challenge us by your Spirit. I pray this in the name of your Son. Amen.